Good morning. It's time for Detroit Today here on WDET. I'm Ryan Patrick Cooper, filling in for Stephen Henderson. Such an honor to be introed with that music. Ahead on Detroit Today, we're going to be talking to the artistic director of the Detroit Opera. You might notice that's a different name from what you're used to, and they're getting back to pre-pandemic productions, finally getting back on stage this weekend. I'm excited for that conversation, but first, let's talk about this. While watching the war play out in Ukraine, have you had a hard time explaining the situation to your kids? Have you tried to help them understand what NATO is and why Ukraine is not part of it? What about the sanctions and what they are doing to Russia and our global economy? A new article in Education Week tries to break these concepts down for students using the metaphor of sports. Here to talk about it are two authors of that article, including Annalise Halverson and Jacinda Bauman. Annalise is an associate professor of teacher education, specializing in social studies, and Jacinda Bauman is a science and social studies teacher at the James and Grace Lee Boggs School in Detroit. Annalise and Jacinda, welcome to Detroit Today.
Good morning. Thanks for having us on, Ryan.
A pleasure. This article really blew me away because I love the idea of elevating sports to talk about difficult things. Annalise, let's start with you. Why do you feel sports are a good metaphor to help students understand what is going on in Ukraine?
Thanks for asking. And first, I'd just like to express our support to the people of Ukraine and what they're experiencing. Jacinda, Don, and I are all educators and just so concerned about what the kids are having to endure. And what I found is that I have three children of my own, and the way in which they've been able to sort of understand sports is, or understand Ukraine is through sports. The day after the invasion, UEFA, the Union of European Football Association, they pulled out of the Champions League Cup in St. Petersburg, moved it to France. And that was the first sort of fact that my oldest son shared with me about that. And so I began to think, wow, you know, sports, it can be a really powerful way to hook kids' interests and get them to really care about what's going on, you know, in countries far, far away.
So this was really a question that your son had brought to you. How old is your son? And did that surprise you that he was putting the pieces together?
He's 13. I have three sons, 13, 11, and 9, and they're all really big sports fans. But ever since a young age, I've been using sports to actually get them to understand civil rights. I mean, they're huge fans of Jackie Robinson and Josh Gibson. The Miracle on Ice movie and story was really compelling for them. And so I found, you know, as a social studies educator who cares deeply about, you know, history and economics and civics and geography, that, you know, learning about sports and, you know, the sort of racism that they've experienced or obstacles they've overcome can just be a really powerful way to learn about history.
Annalise, have you seen this play out before? You know, have there been other topics that sports have been used to tackle, whether it's with your kids or in the classroom?
Absolutely. My colleague Don McClure and I, who's a co-author of this article, we've been studying the ways in which high school kids can use sports controversies to learn about issues of oppression, of transgender rights, of racism. And so we know kids are really interested in sports. About half of all high school kids play sports. And then the other half are exposed to them, you know, they're in schools. And so we've just found that they, because they're naturally engaged and curious and many care about sports, that it's a way to engage them in all sorts of topics.
Jacinda, you're in the classroom. I'm curious, you know, is this a topic that is really on the minds of your students?
Yeah, so I teach middle school, 6th through 8th grade, social studies. And students really came to me wanting to talk about this topic, which I felt like made it different than other subjects that I've taught in the past in either social studies or history. And I think one of the things that made this topic or brought this topic to the forefront of their minds was the exposure it was getting on social media by sports and athletes, but also just by other people that they follow. They were hearing a lot about it before they even got to my classroom. So I kind of had to respond to their interest in that way.
In the article in Education Week, there's a line here. It says, in the past 4 years, we have come a long way from the days of pundits telling athletes to, quote, shut up and dribble. So your middle school students are actually looking to athletes to have a voice, to have a stance. Is that right?
That's right. Yeah, I think athletes and other musicians and just activists that they follow, they are really in tune to what is going on in the world in a way that I've noticed a difference. Even just in the past couple of years, I've noticed a difference in how connected my students seem to be to what's happening all over the world.
Jacinda, with Ukraine, you talk about the importance of cultural boycotts and helping to explain soft power. Can you explain that for us a bit?
Yeah, we spent some time, especially in my sixth grade class, exploring the idea of sanctions, because kids were hearing about sanctions. They were hearing about boycotts, but they didn't really understand them. So we talked about them in terms of punishments that were based economically. And one metaphor we use, a non-sports metaphor that we used, is we talked about like a parent-child relationship and things that sometimes parents do to limit what a student can do either economically or socially. And we use that metaphor to help them kind of understand the role that the U.S. and even private companies in the U.S. were playing.
I mean, that makes sense. I'm a grown man, and sanctions are still pretty confusing to me. So I feel like these are some things that we can actually apply as adults to make these conversations a little bit easier. But Jacinda, real quickly, what is it about that age in middle school where it does take understanding what might be going on in their own lives, their own experiences, to see the bigger world? Is there something about that developmental period that makes it extra important?
Yeah, I think in middle school, students are really starting to try to find out who they are and what their role is in the greater world. Their world kind of expands beyond just their family and their school, and they're trying to figure out if this is something that's really important in the world and with all these people that I look up to and follow, where do I stand? How do I understand it? And where do I stand? And what do I do about it?
As we talk about our experiences trying to explain difficult concepts like war to kids, I'm curious about your own experiences out there. As always, the number to call is 313-577-1019. That's 313-577-1019. I'm curious, have you had trouble explaining the war in Ukraine to your kids, your grandkids, or to your students if you're also a teacher? What has been helpful when trying to describe what is happening? Have you thought of using sports to help explain things like NATO or the sanctions that are taking place? And what have you found to be helpful when engaging younger people on this large political topic? Again, that number, 313-577-1019. Annalise, why does it matter that younger people are interacting with this information and partaking in the dialogue around the war in Ukraine?
Well, in social studies, we really, the purpose of it is to get kids to sort of see their roles as citizens, to be able to be active change agents, to be informed, to be able to make decisions that are grounded in facts, in reasoning. In the article, we mentioned, just the importance of having kids become global citizens. And the humanitarian aspect of this war and seeing, what children are going through, it's captivating to kids. It's concerning. And we want children to, care about their peers, not just in Ukraine, but in countries all over the world that are experiencing war and conflict.
Do you think social media plays a role in this? I would imagine that, it feels closer than ever because you can see these things directly on your phone if you're a kid.
I think that's right. I mean, television, social media, and, you know, as parents and teachers, we also have to be careful about how much children are absorbing and seeing. It can be really scary. And so I think it's, you know, it's about being responsive to kids' questions and figuring out what they're interested in, what questions they have, answering them, not going into too much detail, just depending on their age and sort of their developmental level and capacity to be able to engage with these really tough topics.
Yeah. Is there an age that you would recommend to start diving into a topic like this?
Well, you know, I mean, there's children, very young children in Ukraine who are experiencing this. So I think, you know, children from across the world, if they're interested, they can absolutely learn about it. There's research out there that shows that young children are able to understand conflict. I mean, they have conflict in their daily lives. They have conflict. They're able to make conflict from the local to the global. I think it's just really listening to what kids' questions are, responding to them, not giving them more than what they're asking, and then stopping, you know, when it's too much for them. But I absolutely think, you know, my 9-year-old has a you know, pretty good understanding of what's going on. So absolutely, I think elementary kids can grasp this.
That idea of approaching it head on, of not avoiding it with kids when talking about tough topics, that does seem to be a really important ingredient of what you're recommending.
Exactly. And it's about being factual and being accurate, but also, you know, knowing when to step back. And, you know, some of the images on television and social media are really horrifying and they're really scary. And kids, you know, my 9-year-old said, you know, how are the kids in the subway station getting food? I mean, and so just listening to the kinds of questions that they have, but then also, you know, sort of, you know, limiting, you know, the kinds of exposure they're getting while being factual. It's tough to do, but, you know, I think it's just really about listening to kids and responding to their questions.
Yeah, I mean, that's a heartbreaking thing to have your kid bring up to you. That's a really challenging question to answer and something to talk about. Is there advice that you would give to parents out there, to educators out there of dealing with that initial knee-jerk reaction and the emotion of talking to your kids about something difficult like this?
Yeah, I mean, I think on the one hand, it's important to be factual and to share details of what's happening. On the other hand, it's really important to focus on what you can do to help. You know, our family has given money to UNICEF, you know, to help the children in Ukraine. You know, Jacinta knows wonderful about, you know, teaching kids to write to their politicians and representatives to be able to, you know, let them know that they want change. And so I think it's about focusing on what can you do to help and focusing on the helpers that can be comforting to kids.
Jacinta, take us into the classroom. That's a different set of boundaries that you really have to draw, because these aren't your actual kids. They're your students. So talking about these topics away from the parents, is there a difficulty within that?
Yeah, I think one difficulty comes from the fact that a lot of their exposure to what's happening is out of my control. So a lot of it is happening when they're at home, on social media. And sometimes that's monitored by parents and sometimes it's not. So they're coming to me with a lot of concerns and questions that sometimes I feel prepared for and sometimes I don't. And so I take the responsibility of what I do share and how I have them explore those questions really seriously. This time around, students came to me with lots of questions. I made sure to hear their questions first, and then I tried to find resources to share with them that would hopefully answer some of their questions and give them the tools they needed to be able to answer their questions, not necessarily tell them just from me what is going on, but to show them that there is a way to find factual information out there, and it's not always what you're seeing on social media. It's a tricky balance for a teacher, I think, because you want to make sure they have the facts, but you also want them to have the tools to do that even without you there giving them the facts. You want them to be able to get the facts on their own and understand what make something factual and the difference between that and disinformation.
And Jacinda, it sounds like you have found a recipe of trying to empower kids, right? Annalise mentioned, you know, getting them to understand the concept of reaching out to the politicians that represent you. I'm curious, you know, is there magic to treating them like adults to some degree to make them feel like their voices matter in the same way they see their parents have voices or that matter and have conversations that matter?
Yeah, I think there's definitely magic in treating kids like people. I wouldn't even necessarily say adults. I would just say treating them as a counterpart in a mutual trusting relationship, I think. And I think that's part of why kids were able to come to me and other teachers at our school with their concerns and with their fears, is because they know they're not just going to be ignored or fed some sort of line to make their fears go away. They know that we'll take their fears seriously and we'll help them have the tools to feel empowered to be able to answer their questions and do something about it.
This is Detroit Today. We're talking about how to effectively teach students and talk to kids about the war in Ukraine and other large, complicated topics through the lens of sports. And as always, you're part of this conversation. I'd love to hear from you. 313-577-1019. That's 313-577-1019. Have you had trouble explaining the war in Ukraine to your kids, maybe your grandkids, students if you're a teacher? What has been helpful for you when trying to describe what is happening in the world? Have you thought of using sports to help explain things like NATO or the sanctions that are taking place? And what have you found helpful when engaging younger people on this large political topic? Or do you think that some of these topics shouldn't be discussed with kids at all? That's the question that's on the table for you here on Detroit Today. That number again, 313-577-1019. Coming up next, we will continue this conversation with your calls here on WDET.
WDET is your connection to what's happening in Detroit.
WDET is your place for open dialogue about the issues that impact you.
Stay in the know.
This is WDET FM,
Detroit's NPR station.
This is Detroit Today on WDET. We're currently talking to Annalise Halverson, an associate professor of teacher education specializing in social studies, and Jacinda Bowman, a science and social studies teacher at the James and Grace Lee Boggs School, about an article they worked together on for Education Week that looks at breaking down difficult concepts like the war in Ukraine through the metaphor of sports. We're taking your calls on this too, 313-577-1019. And I do want to get some callers in the mix here because I think this is a topic that's touching a nerve with our listeners. Let's go to Phyllis in Warren. You're on Detroit Today.
Hi, good morning. I think that I have to say I have some disagreement with what the conversation is regarding the teaching of a metaphor for a very horrible subject. I think that what teachers need to do, if this is really an issue in the classroom, bring in grandparents or bring in some of the refugees who fled Europe during the Second World War. These are people who lived through it. I was born in Chicago, and I lived in Chicago, and during the war, we had to have blackouts. We had to keep our lights, our drapes closed and lights off, if you will, at certain times to make sure that there was a darkness over the city. And these are things that are important in terms of the real way. I also think kids get too much information. I think, yes, they can get it on their cell phones and their tablets and whatever, and they also can get it on the news. And that when I was a child and the Second World War was going on, that isn't how we got it. It would be through the headlines of a newspaper, or it would be perhaps when we went to the movies, there would be a news short that would show some of the things that were going on. And the worst part of all was, of course, when they evacuated the concentration camps and those soldiers that did the evacuation were American soldiers as well as others who, when they came home, couldn't even talk about the horrors that they saw. The bodies stacked in piles like garbage, the people emaciated and coming out in rags, bones going through their skin because they were so thin and had no food. These are the realities of war. I think a sports metaphor is not to my liking. My children are grown. I have great-grandchildren. It's just not the way I would want to teach them. I think they need from firsthand experience, from flags hanging in windows with stars on them, symbolizing either a lost family member or a lost soldier. If it was gold star and if it was a blue star, it meant that they had someone away in service. And if you rode the public transportation in Chicago, you could see these little flags hanging in windows. This was how we had to deal with it. We had to deal with rationing. We had to deal with victory gardens. You could not buy gasoline for your car unless you could show that you had a victory garden and were growing some of your own food somehow for yourselves in the city.
Phyllis, let me I really appreciate your call and your perspective on it. You know, you mentioned the idea of getting news or information from limited sources, right? A newsreel before a movie or headlines. But is there something now? I mean, things have changed. We do have more information that's coming to us. Don't you think that there could be a different approach, maybe a softer approach than what you're advocating for?
This is not a soft topic. It's a hard, horrible topic. And it's something that has to be looked at as it is. And when you see too much of it, you become inured to it. And this is not the way to do it. Do it with reality. It is reality. It isn't a game. And again, elderly people coming into the classroom one day a week and talking about their personal experiences would do more to make it real, and that instead of making it feigned and not something that you could pass over.
Phyllis and Warren, I really appreciate that call, a very powerful call and a very important perspective. Jacinda, is that something that you've used in the classroom? Is bringing in firsthand accounts to maybe really, you know, nail in the reality of a situation like a war in Ukraine or a Holocaust survivor in the classroom?
I haven't personally. I know that we do expose kids to the reality. Students, through their reading, get to read stories of the Holocaust. That's we explore World War II in a history research unit, but I would love to. I think that is a great approach to allowing kids to see the like really personal effects of war and the realities of war. I think that I would certainly be open to it. It's not something I've done yet.
Annalise, I want to ask you, you know, is there the possibility of too much too soon? You know, Phyllis brought up that point of these images maybe being too brutal or really desensitizing kids. What would you say to that?
Yeah, no, I really appreciate Phyllis's points, and I completely agree that these other strategies of teaching about Ukraine are incredibly powerful. It's that human connection. It's that human experience. And just to clarify, you know, we're not advocating sports be the metaphor for war. It's just that it can be a hook to engage them. We know kids are following sports. And so that's why we thought, you know, if they're engaged with sports, this could be a lever to help them, you know, learn about the war in other ways. But I completely agree that they're absolutely, we can expose kids too much too soon. And that's why we really need to follow their lead and see and look carefully at how they're responding and keep going if they're asking questions and then stop when it's too much for them.
Right. We started this conversation talking about kids in the classroom, kids in your home, Annalise, that were mm-hmm. actually bringing this to the table. You didn't bring it up. They brought it to you and how mm-hmm. to approach that. RZS on Twitter writes in saying, young people have many questions. I think teachers are perfectly capable of teaching this and clarifying. Hopefully they can explain some of the horrors that are on social media. I applaud the teachers trying to make sense of this horrible crisis that affects us all. Appreciate that comment. Twitter is a place that you can engage with us. Also on Facebook, we'll integrate your comments into the conversation here. And we do have open lines at 313-577-1019 if you want to join the conversation here on Detroit Today. Annalise, one thing I was thinking about reading this article is the idea of a winning side and a losing side in sports, and how sports could be potentially a comparison for morality. How do we navigate who is good or who is bad when we're talking about a global conflict like Russia and Ukraine?
It's a great question, Ryan. And, you know, kids, they do tend to see the world sometimes in stark contrast and in black and white. And certainly with a game, with a sports game, there is a winner and a loser. But, you know, sometimes there's ties and sometimes there's overtime. I think, you know, it's much more complex than a game, though, of course. And it's very hard to, you know, for kids to just see Putin as being evil and, you know, the rest of the West and the rest of the world as being good. It's much more complex. And but in this case, you know, it's really interesting for kids. You know, my kids have been seeing how divided, and we all have been seeing how divided the country is, but to see, you know, the U.S. really coming together in support of Ukraine, you know, Republicans and Democrats alike, this has been more unifying than something they've seen in a long time.
Yeah, that idea of unity is one aspect of it, but there's also the idea of political protest. That's the other aspect that mm-hmm. we see here in this country and in places like Ukraine and Russia. So a question for really both of you, Annalise, you can start. When we're breaking down the idea of protest to kids, how is it best to explain that concept?
Well, I mean, for decades, for centuries, people have been protesting, and I think it's important for kids to understand the history of it, that people have a right to use their voice, to use, you know, boycotts, to use their words. And in this article, we're talking about athletes, you know, really, you know, they're citizens and they have views and they have perspectives and kids look up to them. And so it's really important for kids to be able to understand that people can use their power, you know, to affect change.
Jacinda, how would you go about explaining the idea of political protest to your classroom?
I think that being a teacher at a place-based school in Detroit is a really it's a privileged place to come from, because Detroit is such a place of activism, and I think we always start from really young ages at our school learning about really local issues and what activists are doing to fight for their needs and their rights in Detroit. And so by the time kids get to me in middle school, they already have a really good idea of what protest looks like and what activism looks and feels like. And I think no matter what aspect of either history or government or social studies I'm teaching, I think it's a really important an important part of that story is to look at, yes, there are injustices, and yes, these are the things that are really horrible in the world, but these are also the people who are fighting to change those things. I think that's a really key message for kids to get, no matter what the topic is.
And Jacinda, that makes a lot of sense. As you're a teacher at James and Grace Lee Boggs School, activism is kind of baked right into the title of that. Some of the biggest activists ever come out of Detroit, no doubt. I want to open up those phone lines, 313-577-1019. Again, that's 313-577-1019. Let's go to Daryl in Dearborn. You're on Detroit Today. Daryl.
Yes, good afternoon.
What's on your mind?
Can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead.
Okay, how you doing? I'm enjoying the conversation today. And just to keep everything in perspective, I am 65 years old. I'm an Army brat. The first 21 years of my life, 18 and a half, I spent with my father traveling, and he fought in in the Korean War, Korean Reconstruction, Vietnam War, and I'm also a retired Detroit police officer. And as Phyllis was mentioning, the Holocaust and bringing in seniors to who have things, I think we have perfect examples right here in America when you had the Black Holocaust during the 1619 when they brought the slave ships and the slaves in America. That was an atrocity, and that's something that is not mentioned. And many times, even in war, they use sports. They use the analogy of sports. And I think when you're dealing with children, they may not always understand what war is all about, but if you, from a perspective, it gives them a general idea. And, you know, children are very resilient today. They are like sponges. They absorb, okay? And they can filter things much better than we as adults. We're the ones that kind of put them in a pinhole. Yeah. What the ladies are doing are great, is great. And I think if they do the comparisons, what's going on in Ukraine, World War One, Two, Three, Korean War, Vietnam conflict, which was a war, Afghanistan war, and even what happened here in America, I think they'll be well-rounded. And I applaud what the ladies are doing. Don't change. Phyllis, I enjoyed what she had to say. She brought in some good perspectives, and there's some things I agree with what she had to say, and there's some I disagree. But I think as a whole, it's all valuable.
Daryl in Dearborn, fantastic call. Thank you so much for sharing your thoughts. Annalise, one thing I'm noticing with the callers, there's a bit of a generational divide, right? We're talking about firsthand accounts of people that actually lived through some of these other conflicts and the importance of hearing those stories. But I'm also curious, the way we talk about things in general has certainly changed from the 60s and 70s, right? The way you would approach this in the classroom then is very different now, I would imagine. But you tell me.
That's great. And I appreciate the call too, and applaud, appreciate Daryl's service, certainly. Definitely there's ways in which social studies has changed and the ways in which we engage kids in global events. But a lot of it has remained the same. I mean, kids in the 60s and 70s were learning about these issues in the streets and, you know, in their own experiences, you know, through the Detroit Rebellion and other protests, you know, as well as in the classroom. And so, I mean, I think there's definitely been some shifts in how kids learn, especially with regard to media coverage and the just incredible amounts of information now kids have to sort through. It's really hard. It's really complicated. There's so much disinformation out there. And so it's the skills that social studies have educators need to use have really shifted because we've really had to really engage in media literacy and how do kids, you know, how are they able to understand what they're seeing and evaluate the sources and look for credibility.
Annalise, maybe an entirely different conversation, that idea of media literacy. But I do have to ask you, do you see this generation having a higher media literacy? I mean, where do we stand right now in terms of kids understanding and sorting through, you know, misinformation, disinformation, fake news and all that on social media?
Yeah, I mean, actually, Jacinda mentioned that to me, that a lot of the kids in the class you know, are using social media and getting a lot of their information from social media. And so it's definitely, it's something that we're seeing that's a shift in, it's a generational, you know, shift. And social studies has changed in that regard. How we teach social studies has had to change in that regard.
Yeah, Jacinda, can you elaborate that a little bit on how kids are processing all of this information?
Yeah, I think on the one hand, to answer one of your questions, I think that because there's so much that they're exposed to, they are a lot more literate in terms of media. I've had experiences where kids can point out right away why this website doesn't seem legitimate or why this information doesn't sit right with them. And also they are exposed to so much. There's just, it seems for some of them that there's just constant input. And so, it's hard to kind of compete for that space sometimes. I think that's why there sometimes is a challenge of making something feel relevant to them, just because there's so much they're exposed to and so much that they're interested in. And so that, I think that is why, one of the reasons why this using sports to kind of hook them in, or using the social media accounts they follow to kind of hook them in, helps them teach something that otherwise may not be able to compete for the interest that they have in all of the other aspects of social media.
Right. Yeah. Cutting through that noise, I'm sure can be very difficult. Really fantastic conversation. As we walk away from this, I do want to try to give some practical advice to parents that are out there listening. Jacinda, kind of the main takeaways here when we're using sports or other metaphors to talk about huge conflicts like Ukraine, go ahead and give some advice for parents that are like, okay, I heard this conversation. I'm going to go home. I'm going to give it a shot.
Yeah, I think it's hard for me to give parental advice because I'm not a parent yet, but I think my approach with talking about this topic has always been start where the kids are at. So what have they heard? What are they curious about? What are their fears? And go from there. And maybe I kind of take the approach of let's look into this together. Let's find out what information we can find to answer our questions. What information can we find to quell some of our fears?
Annalise, you are a parent. So for the parents out there, go ahead and give them the main takeaways that would be important for them to know.
Yeah, I mean, I really think it's critical for us as global citizens to know what's going on in the world and to be engaged and to ask questions and figure out how we can help. And, you know, one of the things that we wanted to emphasize is that, you know, kids look up to athletes. And so following some of their favorite athletes and what are they saying? Because athletes are really using their platforms to, you know, speak out about, you know, rights, human rights and oppression and so forth. So, I mean, I think they can, you know, look to what the athletes are saying, watch the news, you know, to the extent that it's interest to them, and then, you know, turn it off and do something else, you know, when it's too much.
That is Annalise Helverson, an associate professor of teacher education specializing in social studies. We are also joined by Jacinda Bowman, science and social studies teacher at James and Grace Lee Boggs School. They recently collaborated on an article for Education Week that tries to break down concepts of war, sanctions, our global economy through the metaphor of sports. Annalise and Jacinda, really fantastic conversation. Thank you so much for joining us on Detroit Today.
Thanks for having us.
Coming up next on Detroit Today, we're going to focus on opera right here in Detroit. Some big changes happening downtown at Detroit Opera and the returning to the stage, the main stage, for the first time since the pandemic. That's ahead here on Detroit Today.